Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 301 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host once again. And today my guest is Steve Fretson. Now, Steve is one of the giants in the legal marketing and business development space. I've had him on the show before, back on episode 266, almost a year or so ago. And I'm delighted to have him back with us today. Steve's a friend of mine, and in full disclosure, I am a client of his. But we were friends before his first appearance, and we'll continue to be friends afterwards. And I wanted to have Steve on today for a couple of different reasons, principally because he's got a new book coming out. And the book is called Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. And isn't that the truth? So Steve has written this book. It's kind of a, it's his fourth book, and it summarizes some of the things written in the earlier books and adds some new material. It's very broad in terms of its treatment of the things that a budding law entrepreneur would want to know in terms of legal business development. And I also want to talk about the whole process of writing a book and why that is useful and how one might go about doing that if you were an attorney. So if you were an attorney with a blog post and had a whole bunch of articles already written and you wanted to reuse that content, how would you go about formatting that into a book or creating a book out of it? And, you know, what are some of the important concepts with respect to publishing a book? So anyway, I thought this would be a great topic to start off the new year. So without any further delay, here is my friend, Steve Fretson. Steve Fretson, welcome back to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thanks, Neil. Thanks for having me back.
Yes. Well, if that name sounds familiar, Steve was a guest of ours just a few months ago, actually. But for some of our listeners who may not have heard your previous episode, why don't we go ahead and kind of reset the table and tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today, Steve?
Yeah, sure. The easiest way to explain it is I'm not a lawyer. I never thought I would work with lawyers, and I got into my own sales coaching business back in 2004 after working with a number of coaches myself and really redefining how sales process should be done in a way that's non-salesy. And when the recession of 2008 happened, that's when the lawyers started coming out of the woodwork saying, hey, my phone stopped ringing, my hours are down. I've heard good things about you, Steve. Can you help me? And I was like, I think so. Yeah, I'd work with lawyers, I guess. I've worked with, you know, CPAs and financial people and all these other professional services. And one lawyer turned into two, three, five, 10 law firm, and it just went on from there. And within about not a year or two, it made up about 85% of my business. And I just said, let's push the chips in. You know, here I am consulting lawyers on how to specialize, and I hadn't pulled the trigger myself. And I still, you know, talk to lawyers on a regular basis about specializing. And one idea is to wait until you have enough momentum in a particular area to actually push your chips in and do it. And so that's what happened to me and why I spend every day, all day working with lawyers, helping them grow their law practices.
I tell other attorneys that there's three or four people, in my opinion, that if you're not getting their newsletter or you're not seeing them on social media or you're not otherwise familiar with them, then you're really not connected into the legal community or the legal marketing community specifically. And Steve Fretson is one of those folks. I mean, if you're not getting his newsletter, and if you're not reading his books, and if you're not getting his email messages on a regular basis, then you're doing something wrong as an attorney, because you're everywhere, Steve.
I'm trying. I have two goals. One is to work with a certain number of lawyers every year to help them hit some pretty dramatic goals and results and make their law practice growable and sustainable year after year. But I can only do that with so many attorneys a year. So the other thing I'm really focused on is helping the industry as a whole. Individual lawyers that might be, in Germany, they might be in California, they might be in Idaho. And content is the way to do it, because you can get your ideas, you can get your tips and tricks and all the different things of ways of doing things to help improve efficiencies out to the masses. And that's the beauty of podcasting and books and social media and all the stuff you mentioned, Neil. So that's what I try to do, is just be a resource to attorneys that are interested in growth. If you're not interested in growth and you're hiding under your desk from the idea of business development and marketing and such, at some point you might want to poke your head out and check out what me and others are writing about.
Yeah. And I know you're also a huge proponent of repurposing content. So it's just not a one-shot, one-and-done type of deal.
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely pointless to produce a piece of content and then that's it. Then you got to start over. The idea that you can take an article and you can create a book out of it, you can take an article and you can make a blog post, you can use it for posts on social media, it can be repurposed 3, 4, 5 times from the same amount of time that you invested initially in writing that article or putting together a podcast or a video. So I think that lawyers, whether you do it yourself or you outsource that, repurpose is a theme that needs to be, just continually beat into the head of attorneys that aren't thinking strategically about how to leverage content for exposure and branding in the same way that maybe you and I do.
Well, I think one of the challenges that folks have is that this whole kind of repurposing the content conundrum is this gigantic ball of yarn, rolled up. And I think folks don't often know where to start pulling at that to make progress. Do you have a sense of like where to start? I know for a lot of folks, it start with video and everything flows from there. And others, it's start with an email list and everything flows from there. What's your sense of that?
I think my sense of it is the easiest way to go is to start with, and I'll give you an example of how this can all work. So let's just take a sample article. I'm writing an article for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, and I have for the last 6 years. And it's an article that I wrote that brings out not only my personal experiences, but also has a solid business twist. A good example is one I wrote. I watched the Beatles documentary. I don't know if you've seen that, Neil.
Yes.
But I mean, blown away. And not only blown away from watching amazing songs get created, but watching the behaviors of the Fab Four and how they interact with each other. And as a studier of behaviors, I really was intrigued by that. So I studied it and I wrote an article relating them to the DISC assessment, which is behavioral, how people behave. And so there's dominance, influencing, status, compliance, without going down a long road. I wrote an article for the Bulletin on that point. That article then gets retitled and some language gets changed. It gets put on my website blog. So now I've got it going out to the Chicago Law Bulletin readers, and I've got it on my blog, which now gets search engine optimization. And when I promote it on social media, which is the next step, then that's going to lead people back to my website where they would then see a video, or they would then get interested in another article that they see on my blog. And so it's like about figuring out how to get in front of people and then the rabbit hole that they go down of content. But that article can then be broken up into pieces and put on social media, in LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, however you want to lay it out. And then of course, you've got 3, 4, 5 uses for it. And then, as I'll mention later, about my book, how I created the book was a series of articles that all, were put together in a massive, 51 chapter book. So there's a lot that can be done. And if it's something that's just beyond a lawyer's interest, capabilities, time, whatever, you definitely want to look to outsource that and have somebody really do that for you. That can be an assistant, an associate, or an outsource company that would perform those tasks for you.
For sure. Yeah. And I think that's almost a given if you're talking about the breadth of spreading the content around so many platforms, it becomes a job in and of itself. So there's no way an attorney should be doing all of that. I mean, I do some of that myself personally, because a few of those things I like doing, and it's just easy for me to do. It doesn't take me much time because I'm a techie. But if you don't really have those skills, you know, locked in, there's no reason for you to be doing that. And you really should be outsourcing it to a variety of different places.
Yeah. It's the most common barrier for not getting something done is that you're trying to do it yourself when you don't have the experience or the capacity to do it. And it really is just about talking to people to find the best way to outsource it. And it isn't a lot of money. I mean, we're not talking about millions of dollars. It's, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars a month, but it's in the grand scheme of things and what that can do to bring business in, it ends up being a drop in the bucket.
How do you address some of the new emerging technologies or the new platform of the month, the flavor of the month, social media platform? You stick to the tried and true, you know, basic, the big four, so to speak, or are you starting to dabble in things like TikTok and others?
You know, I think what I do is I explore what's available and I try it out and see if it really fits either my style, my ability, my time, or my ability to participate in a level that's going to be meaningful. LinkedIn is my go-to because I just know that that's where my audiences are. Yeah. That's a place to get a lot of feedback and a lot of commentary and sharing of content and things like that. I did try, for example, Clubhouse. I think I was involved in that for a few weeks, and I just realized maybe early on, you know, that you can't do everything. And Clubhouse takes a tremendous amount of time and energy that I just don't have. Right. I don't have the capacity for it. So TikTok, same thing. You know, who's the TikTok audience? Who's really looking at TikTok? Instagram, I'm just getting going on, but that's one where, you know, you've got to have really good video content to participate on Instagram. And it's got to be different, you know, type of content versus, you know, the same things I would post on LinkedIn. So I think you got to look at what you're producing and where your audience is, and then decide what media platforms make the most sense.
One of the things that's kind of intrigued me is I've spoken to more and more attorneys who are actually using TikTok. And if you'd asked me, I don't know, 6 months ago, is that a viable platform for attorneys to do business development on? I would say, similar to you, I'm a little leery of that. But one person in particular, as of late, said, well, listen, my target audience is young 20s somethings, you know, people who are just getting out of college and contemplating marriage. And I want to do all of their prenuptial agreements. I think the lack of a prenuptial agreement in the family law space is the single biggest way, or the single biggest problem we have, and the easiest solution to implement. And so I want to get the message out about prenuptial agreements to these young 20-somethings who are getting married, and they're on TikTok. So we have a TikTok show. We put one out every day and have fun with it. They do little kind of skits or kind of setup pieces, or they'll do a straightforward informational exchange, a lecture, if you will, kind of some variety. They do the one they did recently that really amused me. You've seen those kind of whiteboard presentations that are used as ads. I think they use a platform called Doodle.
It's like an animated thing that goes along with what you're saying or what the announcers are saying.
Yeah. Well, they actually did it by hand, drawing on a yellow legal pad with a magic marker. And I just thought that was kind of funny. So
there's so many different ways to create content. And if you can find a channel, whether it's TikTok working, or Instagram. Yeah. But I think it's about putting your toe in the water and doing it the way that you think or that you know will get attention. And then is it the right kind of attention? And then can you then be consistent with that performance? Because I think that's the mistake we all make in content production is, you know, not being consistent. You know, you're 300 shows plus. Well, why? Because you're consistent. How many people don't last 6 months in a podcast?
Most, you know, 90%. Most.
Yeah. So you've got to, it's okay to get out early if you realize it's not for you or you realize you can't be consistent. But I think you've got to dip your toe and see what's out there.
Yeah. And the challenge I think there that exists with something like the TikTok channel is I don't know how you could repurpose that. So it to me is kind of a one-off experience. But then, I mean, you listen to guys like Gary Vaynerchuk, who just crushed the Instagram space.
Yeah. And now lawyers are starting to do that. I mean, there's a guy down in Atlanta who's killing it on Instagram and the personal injury space. And he sort of wrote the book on it. And now I think people are starting to copy him like people have been copying Gary.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now, I know in your experience, you mentioned it briefly here, and I want to kind of circle or focus in on that writing a book was important to the process of developing your business. And there are, you know, a ton of attorneys that on their annual goal list is start my book or finish my book or plan my book or
learn how to read a book
or read a book or learn how to spell the word book. and I can make fun of those folks because I have my hand firmly raised high in the sky. I've stopped putting it on my list of objectives because I've just failed to execute on that objective so many times. So I'm intrigued. Now you've got four books out there on the market. The latest one, let's talk about, we'll mention the title. Then I want to talk about the process of how you went about writing the book. Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. Well, isn't that the truth? Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. Tell me how you came up with the title of the book, what the theme of the book was, and then how you, the processes you went through in order to write the book.
So it's interesting. I'm coaching lawyers around the country who expect that they're going to hear rocket science out of me. And the reality is a lot of what I tell them and a lot of what I'm coaching them on are things that they've either heard before that maybe even they instinctively know, but they're not doing. And so, you know, for example, asking a client for an introduction, all lawyers know that that's out there to do, but they just don't have the comfort with the language of how do you say to a general counsel of a major corporation, you know, send me some other general counsels to talk to. It isn't rocket science, yet there's language that I've created and I've worked on and improved over the years that is critical to making that transformation of not making the ask to making the ask in a friendly way, in a way that's not going to upset the general counsel, in a way that almost makes the general counsel's idea, because they know you're valuable as a lawyer and they know that they could add value to other people they know that are general counsels, for example. So enough of my clients said that this isn't rocket science. They said, you know what, let's just title the book to that point. And I am trying to share with the legal industry that the things I'm teaching are, you know, there is process, there's methodology, there's language, there's things that need to be learned, but none of it is anywhere near as complicated as building a rocket ship.
Yeah. And I think you've drawn upon a number of different areas, or you're focused on a number of different areas in this book. Were you concerned at all in its development as to whether or not it should have the breadth that it has, or whether you should focus more on one of the different parts of the book, say business development or marketing or networking or whatever it might be? What led you to go to having this more broadly inclusive manuscript?
Sure. So the first book I wrote was called Sales Free Selling, The Death of Sales and the Rise of a New Methodology. And it really is getting into the weeds on what my business development process is for getting business and locking up business in a non-salesy way. So I already had a book that really focused on that. That book was unique in the sense that it's a story of a character named Scott, that's me, and three clients that I'm working with, one of which is Dan, the attorney. And it's a story of these three people, you know, working with a coach and going through the model of the classes and the things that I do every day. And so I kind of hit that mark pretty well. People still talk about that book and how it changed their whole perception of how they've been pitching and convincing and talking to prospective clients and doing it in a much more formal way where there's no sales involved. The second book was called The Attorney's Networking Handbook, which alludes to, you know, it's all about teaching all the best tips and tricks I have on networking as an attorney and all the subtleties that go into developing relationships and getting actual results from networking, which lawyers generally are very frustrated with. They do a ton of networking, in some instances, sheer effort and force to get business in the door, when in reality, there are strategies and techniques and things to make it, you know, very soft and warm and nurturing and all that. So this book, you know, being the fourth, is really well-rounded in covering sales, marketing, social media, networking, and practice management, because those are all the things that I write about every month for the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin. And so we talk about repurposing. This book is 100% a repurposed book, in the sense that I've taken 6 years of content from the Chicago Daily Law Bulletin articles and put them into one book, one collection of my greatest hits. So that's why it's so well-rounded, and why, yeah, I think it's probably my best book, if maybe next to Sales Free Selling, because it really includes everything in the kitchen sink that an attorney would want to learn about growing a law practice.
Yeah, I think that's true. It covers a tremendous breadth of area here in terms of business development. Hits all the major topics. It's timely too. You know, I think one of the challenges that authors in the legal space have is oftentimes by the time they get to print, it's outdated, you know, or if they've focused on some of more daily activities or things that we experience throughout the week, that a year from now, that's no longer true. I mean, if you started writing a book before COVID and you published it during COVID, chances are the environment that it's being received in would be completely different. This book of yours, I think, is timeless in that sense, because it kind of reflects on all of the things that you dealt with over the course of time as an author and as a coach. If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time, because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly makes it easier when you have a topic that isn't involved in radical change. I mean, yeah, if the technology was changing so much, or the conditions are changing so much, I do include chapters that involve, like, the, you know, what to do, you know, how to build your law practice during a pandemic and all that. So it does have, you know, more recent from the last 2 years in there to cover some of that ground. But I totally get what you're saying about, yeah, you know, you really have to be writing something that is going to resonate with the way the world is now.
Now, you didn't just slap this book together. I mean, you took a lot of content that you had before, but it's not just, let's sort them into four piles and put a cover on it, right?
No, there's a ton of effort and thought and updates that goes into a book like this.
Tell me about that process.
Yeah, so essentially it's looking at, you know, what I've done before and what I want to put out. And so getting organized with the chapters that I feel are maybe outdated, that need to be updated. Maybe it's the chapters that need to be put into certain banks and moving them around from area to area to make sure that they resonate with the head of that chapter. Because, you know, you want to make sure that when someone's reading chapters on marketing, that they're directly related to marketing or social media, and networking is its own category. So it really is about making sure that before you publish something, that it's been updated, it's been improved, it's been well thought out. So when you put it out, it isn't slapped together, and it really makes sense and resonates. Even the order of the chapters, you know, if there's a chapter on planning, I want that to come before something that involves execution, because that way it's going to be a great lead into other chapters that are going to take you to the next level, next step.
Yeah. So did you start with a top level outline and then look to see where your existing articles might support that top level entry? Or did you take the catalog of material that you had and sort it, see how it sorts out to find out what your top level outline ought to be? What was the chicken or the egg?
You know, I think it was definitely the the outline of the chat, because I know what I write about. I'm not, you know, I don't have to like, what, geez, I wonder what I'm writing about. I know what I'm writing about in the areas that I cover. And there were some that were, you know, in between, because some of it involved, for example, networking, but leaked into business development. And I had to kind of make a judgment call about which one it would go. But you start off with the table of contents, the big picture, the title, the chapters, and then how do you then break down all the chapters into that subheading? And that's how you create it. And then, of course, the order they go in and how you want the reader to feel as they're going through. And I kind of talk about in the foreword a little bit, or the introduction, I should say, about, you know, what people should expect. You know, I want to say, like, here's what you should expect to get out of it. And then I have to provide what I told them they would expect. So, you know, for lawyers that are struggling to get a plan together, you know, hey, it's in here. For lawyers that are wondering how to leverage social media in an efficient, effective way, well, it's in there. So I'm sort of setting the tone, you know, and then knocking down the pins within each, you know, chapter to make sure that it's hitting the mark.
Did you have to do a lot of rewriting or editing or original writing to fill in the gaps, or were you lucky that your previous work was sufficient as is?
Yeah, pretty much. When I talk about repurposing, that was part of the benefit, is I had two editors going over the chapters before they get to the print. So by the time it gets back to me for the book, I review it, I make the changes I need to make to update it if I need to update it. But generally speaking, from a grammatical standpoint, from a content standpoint, it had been already reworked a number of times prior to it going out in for the Daily Law Bulletin. So putting it back into a book, you know, there was a minimal amount of editing that really needed to take place, which, again, you know, it's all about efficiency and time, you know, for all of us in our businesses. And so anything that you can do right the first time or the second time, you know, that's going to obviously save you on the back end.
Well, what I'm thinking about is that there are plenty of attorneys who have, you know, have a blog on their website and have created blog content for years, writing about their practice areas, whether it be family law, personal injury, doesn't matter. They've got a number of articles. And if they were to look at all of this and say, I would like to kind of consolidate this, repurpose this in the form of a book, where would I start? Would I look at all the list of blog posts that I've written and come up with an outline and then sort them according to that outline? Or, you know, as you said, would I create the outline first and then pick which blog posts kind of support that? So you've addressed that question. And I think, you know, for our listeners, that's an approach that you can take. Then, so now you have this collection. You've got the outline, you've got these all this material collected, you've got it ordered and properly arranged in the form of the book. Are you self-publishing or do you have a publisher? How is it getting to press?
Yeah, so let's talk about that for a moment, because the old days of publishing a book, you needed to find a publisher, you needed to, you know, spend time doing that. And then once you had that and it got published, you know, they would supposedly handle, you know, the marketing and the, you know, and all the things that go along with it. You'd have to hold a tremendous amount of inventory. In some cases, they'd make you buy hundreds or thousands of books to print so that, you know, you would have that to send out and you would hold the inventory. And you would also make very little money on the book because you'd make 10 cents on the dollar for every book that sold. So, you know, the people that, you know, you'd have to sell millions of books to really make any kind of money out of it. And today it's so terrific. So instead of having to deal with a publisher, and I've worked with a publisher before, and it was an absolute disaster in every way, that their ability to say what they're going to do and then execute and get it done, it just never happened. It just dragged out and dragged out and dragged out. And I just was super frustrated. And then the amount of money I made per book, as I mentioned, was nothing. So I'm out hustling to sell books and get that in front of my attorney, you know, audience, and it wasn't happening. So the long and the short is that now there's a thing called KDP, Amazon Publishing. And so essentially, you know, you can come up, you can either do it or you can outsource all of this to someone to help you create the book, the editing, the cover. Everything can be outsourced. There's so many people that have the ability to do this. Now, I actually love the creative part of the title and coming up with the imagery. Now, I'm not an artist, so I had to then outsource the imagery, but I came up with the cover of a rocket ship being pulled apart. And then the words, you know, marketing, business development, et cetera, kind of spewing out of it. That was my brainchild. But I had someone, actually, it's my stepbrother, who's an artist, who I had put it together. And yeah. I don't think he charged me. I think I just sent him a nice gift card. So the long and the short is that you don't hold inventory. They create books on demand. If I need 50, 200 or one, I can order that directly through their back end site and it can be delivered in 2 weeks. So it's just never been easier. And profitability wise, you know, books that sell for $25 and $30 can be created and shipped for under 10. And you're making the rest of that as profit. So it's really a terrific situation now. And I don't think people are saying, well, are you self-published or not, or published through a major publisher? Does anybody care?
I don't think anybody cares anymore.
I don't think anybody cares. Yeah. I think it used to be a thing. Like if you weren't published by the big publisher, right? And so I don't know how these publishers are doing it unless they have, you know, big name authors, you know, talent. Yeah. Right. Yeah,
exactly.
So I just think if you have the content sitting in a bin or you want to create content and from here moving forward, I'm just telling you, you can, not only has it never been easier, but there's so many people, companies, et cetera, that can help you with this to get it knocked out that you just have to, you know, just decide to pull the trigger and really get it together. So creating that outline and all that.
Was it KDP, did you say?
Yeah, KDP, which is Kindle Direct Publishing, which is now a part of Amazon.
Okay. I remember Victor Medina, when he was talking about publishing his book, was singing the virtues of the same process many moons ago when one of the times I had Victor on the show. And one of the things that he mentioned was that you can choose the format of the book, whether you want it in, obviously, you know, paperback, but you want it, what size you want, what font you want, and then have that all set up properly. I was mentioning that, gee, that sounds like an awful lot of graphic design work that I'm not sure that I would want to take on. And as you have said, you can outsource this. There's a number of people who that's all they do is set up manuscripts for publication in the system on your behalf.
Yep, exactly. So it's again, it's never been easier to do a book than today, never. And it's never been easier to, if you're looking, so there's two reasons you do a book generally.
I was just going
to
say, let's talk about why you would want to do that. And let's also talk about pricing.
Yeah. But the segue is, look, you're either doing it because, you know, you want to become famous and make a lot of money, and that's fine. If you've got a book that can do that, plenty of people do. The guy who did, you know, the, what is it? Something for Dummies. You know, I mean, that guy, I'm sure made millions and millions of dollars. And, you know, there's a lot of authors that are, can make a bank on writing a book. However, a lot of the people that write a book are looking to use it as a promotional tool, to use it as a business card. And so to be able to produce a book for $3-$4 and be able to give it out 20 copies, 100 copies, one copy at will and not have to hold that inventory is just fantastic. So I've been just, because it just popped up on Amazon in the last couple of weeks, I've been sending books everywhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so that's really, really been terrific. As far as pricing, there's a couple of different philosophies. I know someone who is very well known in the industry, the legal marketing industry. He put together a nothing burger book that's probably 50 pages, and I think he charged $50. Now, some people would say, well, that's insane. I wouldn't pay $50 for a nothing burger book, but I'm sure he got it because this guy is a well sought after marketing expert in legal. And if you want to know what he is telling you, then this is the book to buy. And so, you know, you can always start high and then work your way down from 50 to 40 to 30 if you want. Me, I run more in the line of, I just want it to be bought without someone having to worry or think about the money. So if I start a book out at, let's say, $20, a $19.95 or whatever the case might be for a softback book, and I can always move it to $14.95 after a year if I want. I can have the Kindle version set up and I can have it at $10. Yeah. And then knock it down to a buck or then free over a course of a year or two. So you have to just kind of think about, you know, who your audience is, what the value of the book is. Do people know you already or not?
Is there some value? Is there some value to setting like the Kindle version real low to start with to build buzz, and then when the quote paperback is available, having it at a higher price point?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that an easier way to do it, Neil, is to really look at what the other books in your area are going for, because you don't want to be so high or so low that you're not making sense. Okay. So let's say that I'm looking at a book by one of my fellow lawyer coaches, and I'm friends with a lot of them, and they're awesome people. And I see that one of them has a book, and it, you know, and it's you know, $24.95. And then I see another one that's 30 and another one that's 20. Well, I know that if I go in at $24.95 or in that ballpark, that's the right place to be. But again, it also might be dependent on kind of what your status is within your legal industry. For example, let's say a lawyer is a top labor and employment lawyer, I mean, known across the country as the top labor and employment lawyer. Well, that lawyer could probably write a book and then have it priced at a higher price point than someone who's an unknown labor and employment lawyer who's, you know, got some things to share. So I think that you want to look at that piece of it too, kind of where are you in the market and what's your status level as an expert in your field?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm just going to, you know, pontificate a little bit personally. I think for me, my pricing strategy for a book that I'm going to use more as a promotional tool is going to be equivalent to my Friday bar bill. So if you could say, hey, buy me a couple of drinks and I'll tell you everything I know about being a podcaster, you know, if I put that into a book, would you pay that for a book?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean we're not breaking anyone's bank buying a book. I think
the pricing isn't, as you say, rocket science.
Yeah, I think it's fairly simple and common sense. Can you bump it up a little bit? Like I'm producing a softback book and a hardcover book. Some people like the hardcover book, some people like the softcover. Well, yeah, the hardcover is more expensive to produce, and I think it's going to be a larger book. So I'm going to have the price point, you know, $10 higher.
I also think you have to look at the content of the book to make that call as well, because this book of yours, this fourth book, Legal Business Development, isn't rocket science. Is broader and is more comprehensive, and it lends itself, I think, more to a hardback experience. Whereas maybe one or more of your previous books seem to be more of a softback kind of book.
Yeah, and it's a little shorter. It's a little more. It's a little tighter on a particular subject. You know, maybe it's 150 pages, not, you know, 250. Right. So I think when you put more in and there's more value, I think you should demand a higher price and see how it plays out. I mean, that's the thing too. Just like with any content or any strategy, you have to test it. So if I test it out and I'm getting pushback, or I see that I'm not selling at the level that the last one sold or whatever, you know, I can make adjustments. It's not set in stone the way it might be with a publisher who says, no, we're going to hold tight where it is. I can make all the decisions I want to make about how it's going to be produced and how it's going to be sold, how it's going to be marketed, you know, and or if you don't know how to do that, you know, get an expert. There's plenty of people that can help you do that.
And let's wrap this up by talking about why a book. I mean, in the coaching sphere, does it give you credibility, or is it a message that you're trying to get out, or is it a promotional tool, or all of the above?
It's probably all of the above, but I would say number one is, you know, this is my way of helping the masses. I do not have the ability or the capacity to work with more attorneys than I'm able to in a year. Mm-hmm. I don't have a team. I'm not handing them off to my, you know, sub coaches or anyone like that. That's fine. If you've got a business set up like that, great. I don't. I do things my way. I do it the way I want it done. And I love every day that I'm working with attorneys. But the reality is we got 100,000 plus attorneys, or a million plus attorneys. You know, maybe 10% of them are interested in business development. So how do I help them? Well, this is the way. You know, the podcast, Be That Lawyer, my books, my social media posts and things that I share, this is my way to give back and help. And if I happen to make some money along the way doing it, great. Now that's helping my son's 529 get built up, right, Neil?
Exactly.
Right. So I think at the end of the day, you know, the is it good for publicity and getting my name out there? Of course it is. You know, I'm on your podcast talking about it. And so that's fine. But at the end of the day, if I'm helping an attorney out of law school, if I'm helping an attorney, an associate make partner, and they're never going to hire me in a million years, that's fine. But if I'm giving them tips on how to be a more efficient networker, how to do better on social media, how to lock up business that they never thought they could lock up, then I'm doing good for the people. I'm doing good for the legal industry. And that's sort of one of my top, you know, goals for my career is to leave a mark on this industry to make it better than it was. So I think that's the overarching. And yeah, there's publicity and money involved and all that. That's fine too.
Well, I know that I enjoy all of your output. I'm a subscriber to the podcast, Be That Lawyer. I know you hit 150 some odd episodes as of late. So welcome to that club that, again, you know, is not easy thing. As you mentioned, it's not an easy thing to do. I was told at one point that the average lifetime of a podcast was 3 to 6 months. I think that might be longer now than from when I heard it. But just look around the podcast world. There's not too many people with 150 podcasts under their belt. So
Or 300 right now.
Or 300. That's for sure. So congratulations on that. Congratulations on your fourth book, Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. I'm enjoying it, and as I have the previous books. So as a final point, tell our audience how they might be able to reach out to you if they want to follow up about anything we've covered today.
Yeah. So if you're interested in hearing more about Fretson Inc. and what I do as a coach working with clients between coaching and training and the peer advisory groups that I run, or you're interested in my podcast, books, blog, all of that, it's all on my website, Fretson.com. If you're interested in directly going to get the book, it's up on Amazon as a softback right now. The hardback's coming soon. And that is just going to Amazon and typing in Steve Fretson or typing in Legal Business Development Isn't Rocket Science. And you're going to see it pop right up. And look, if you read it and you enjoy it the way I hope you will, you know, give it some positive reviews and let's get it, you know, going on Amazon to get to the top of the list, because I think it's a pretty darn good book.
And share it with your friends.
Share it with your friends. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Steve. Thanks so much for spending time with me today. I do appreciate it and enjoy all that you do. And thank you for being a guest here today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionists, and our newest sponsor, Security Plus. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.